no, my dad's not here today. You see, the police, they came and they took him for a ride. You see, he would not fight in that war, you know, the one they call the war against the poor. And he would not bow down to genocide. We will not bow down. We will not bow down. We will not bow down to genocide. There was a preacher in Harlem who had two children. Both of them died within 1 year because he couldn't get any heat in his tenement during wintertime. Reverend McPhailin's kids didn't get very old. You see, he got no heat and his kids got cold. That's the second child he's had in 1 year that died. You'll see him next week. Old Bob Hope was making little jokes like, drop the bomb. Why don't you clean up the Hanoi, Harlem slum? But we will not bow down to genocide. Can I get a little help? Can I get a witness saying, we will not bow down? Sing that, damn it. We will not bow down. Sing it now. We will not bow down to genocide. What you know, if you point your finger at the foe, you know the graves and the jails and the cannons will open wide. But I got a feeling in my brain, a feeling like I've gone stark, raving insane, cause I will not bow down to genocide. No, he would not. He would not be a tool of genocide. So they locked him in a cell. It was in a federal Jim Crow Southern jail. But we will not bow down to genocide. And it's not only in America South that they try to put a gag in freedom's mouth. But that gag, it's wearing thin this whole world wide. And there's a many man and woman in jail for me and for everyone who would be free, who would not bow down to genocide.
Uhuru, and we were just listening to We Will Not Bow Down to Genocide, sung by folk singer Len Chandler, and we've adopted that as our new theme song, our current theme song here on Reparations in Action, the weekly program done by the African People's Solidarity Committee here on UhuruRadio.com and the Uhuru Radio Network. And that song, for your information, came from a tour that was done in the early 70s, kind of a counter to the USO tours in Southeast Asia that Bob Hope was doing. Well, Jane Fonda and Donald Sutherland were kind of the leads in a troupe, a performing troupe, that went throughout Southeast Asia doing a anti-war theater message, and that song was sung by folk singer Len Chandler. And it's a really excellent movie called FTA that documents that tour. If you get a chance to see that, it's a very excellent piece. So we want to welcome you to our program today on Reparations in Action here on uhururadio.com and the Uhuru Radio Network. And again, this program is a production of the African People's Solidarity Committee. And we want to just extend our tremendous appreciation and respect and gratitude for the African People's Socialist Party for forming our organization so that we can carry the message of African liberation into the white community and take up our role and our responsibility to raise material and political support, financial resources, reparations to the African community and to the African liberation struggle under the direct leadership of the Uhuru Movement and the African People's Socialist Party. And we want to thank the party for this time on Uhuru Radio, where we can talk to all of you out in cyberland and out in the broadcast world, out in the world, about what we can do to do our part from the white community to change the world that we live in, to make it right. I'm Sandy Thompson, and I'm here in the studio today with Penny Hess, chairwoman of the African People's Solidarity Committee, and we're going to play a couple of clips. We're going to play two presentations from African People's Solidarity Day, it's called the Day in Solidarity with African People, that was held in Philadelphia on November 6, 2010. So the first clip that we're going to play is going to be Pam Africa, a section where she talks about the case of Diop Olugbala, the international president of MPDOM. And before we go into her presentation, we want to just talk a little bit and give an update about that case of Diop Olugbala. So Uhuru, Penny.
Uhuru, Sandy, and Uhuru to everybody who's listening today. It's great to be here on Reparations in Action. So, yeah, we're going to talk about the case of Diop Olugbala, or the importance of his case and who he is. Diop is the international president of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement. He's known to a lot of people, first of all, as the person who challenged Obama when he came here in 2008 to St. Petersburg, Florida, on a town hall meeting that was a campaign-building event at a local high school here in the African community. Mm-hmm. And Diop led a contingent of the Uhuru movement, some of whom were outside in a very strong demonstration around the case of Javon Dawson,
yes,
who was a 17-year-old African high school student who was shot in the back during a high school graduation party a month or so prior to that event, which was actually in August of 2008. His family and many, many supporters were outside with a huge banner, "Justice for Javon Dawson." And Diop was inside with some other people, some other members of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement here. And Sandy and I actually were inside. We had excellent seats in that, and we were out at the very top of the bleachers. Diop and
very well positioned behind it for the photo op, because all
absolutely.
The cameras, we were at Obama's back, so all the cameras were facing where Diop was to lead the action.
That's right, and we were able actually to get those seats because Sandy had a blue suit on as we came in, and people assumed that she was part of the Democratic Party entourage, and
they were
ask her
people to form the good photo op. Little did they know.
Ask her, did she want to be in this prime position behind Obama? And she said, yes, but I have some friends with me, and we need to be up there. So we were in this amazing spot
for everyone.
It was great.
And Diop guided us up once we got in the section, guided us up to the top row, which was a smart move on his part, because once we began to challenge the Obama, calling on him to speak for the black community or to address the issues of the black community, a lot of the fervent Obama supporters tried to grab the sign, and you know, it was a smart move that Diop positioned us in the top row of the bleachers.
It was, and it was very, very visible in that way. And excuse me, as Obama came out and began his presentation, Diop unfurled a banner that had been nicely folded up, and it said, "What about the black community, Obama?" And slowly began this chant, and chanting about the question of what about the black community. And finally, Obama got very flustered and actually called on Diop to speak. And Diop was able to put out a strong statement about Obama's ability to make promises to everyone and everything and basically uphold the agenda of imperialism in his international and domestic policies without ever addressing the dire conditions and the ongoing war against the African community, which had been the main cornerstone of his electoral support, of Obama's electoral support. So,
yeah, including that he had not denounced the murder of Sean Bell in New York. He had called on people, he had said, "We have to respect the judge when the judge ruled as justified that the police shot Sean Bell repeatedly, who was at his bachelor party in New York." You know, very brutal murder by the police of an innocent African, you know, just shooting him in the car. And Obama would not speak out against that. He said, "We, you know, the judge ruled, and that's what we go by."
Right. And actually, Hillary Clinton had put out a more heartfelt statement, I guess you could say, to the family, with condolences to the family, that Obama didn't even do. And it was the ramifications of Diop's challenge, although very much not supported by the people in the room, really significant. First of all, because it got major international and national media coverage. It was on the front page, a picture of it on the front page of the New York Times. It was in video coverage all around the world. It practically went viral. There were other kinds of... There were other kinds of spin-off YouTube videos of it and all kinds of things. And it was really, really, really an important thing. And as two years into the Obama administration, it's become, extremely clear that he's doing simply everything he said he was going to do. He's giving trillions of dollars to Wall Street, to the bankers. He's intensifying his wars in Pakistan, Afghanistan, and covert wars throughout the world, building AFRICOM with hundreds and hundreds of bases throughout Africa in order to continue to have the colonial chokehold on the resources and people of Africa, and intensifying in Haiti, just blatant, as we can see with the elections, as we were just talking about in the last show, Glenn Ford's presentation, the sham of that election that's going on while the people are deeply suffering without homes, without health care, in the face of a cholera epidemic. And as his Attorney General Eric Holder is clearly intensifying the legal, military, and police war against the African community inside this country through massive gang injunctions and forwarding the police containment of African communities all over the country, it's becoming very, very clear that what Diop, what the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement and Chairman Amalia Shetela were exposing and struggling for prior to the election of Obama is unfolding so clearly, and more people can see it, can experience it, can know that as this economic crisis deepens, nothing in the African community under Obama is going to address, you know, even housing, foreclosures, gentrification, homelessness, the economic issues, the unemployment, the 50-60% unemployment rampant in many, many African communities in this country. None of that is being addressed by the Obama administration. And, of course, Obama's support and the numbers that are supporting him are going down day by day by day. And so it was a very, very bold and powerful and very prophetic event. And I think that it was important, too, because it has gained the acknowledgement of many organizations and groups, many of whom supported Obama during the election, that it was the Uhuru Movement, it was the African People's Socialist Party that took the lead in militantly exposing Obama. And it was also the basis for the building of the Black is Back Coalition, which brought together Africans and key forces such as Nellie Bailey and Glenn Ford of Black Agenda Report, who also had played an important role in exposing Obama in various kinds of ways prior to his election, and building this growing and powerful and very, very influential coalition that has exposed Obama as a neocolonialist, that takes on the question of a stand against the war and for peace in an anti-imperialist format, understanding that it is U.S. imperialism that must be struggled against, not just for peace, and recognizing also that the U.S. is at war domestically inside the borders of the U.S. against the African community, against the indigenous and Mexican and other colonized peoples inside this country. So it was a very powerful move, and certainly one that put Diop on the radar of an important and influential and very bold organizer in this country.
And the fact that Diop was able to step out front and take the heat around that, because at the time it was an extremely unpopular position to take. But the fact that the Uhuru Movement and Diop led this action, and that he so brilliantly articulated the call for, you know, the real interests of the Black community, it allowed for so many people throughout the U.S. who also, you know, could see the trickery that was involved in the imperialist selection of Obama as white power and blackface. It allowed them to all find each other, and mm-hmm. Because then NPDEM could be, you know, this sort of clarion call, the place that people could come to, and then with the establishment of Black is Back, you know, could be the place that people could come to reassert the genuine interest of the African community.
Yes, and I think that it is also extremely important for any of us from the white community, from the white population, that consider ourselves progressive, that want to take a stand against what U.S. imperialism is doing. It really, the emergence of the Black is Back Coalition really creates a mandate now the white community, for the so-called progressive white community to take a stand in solidarity with the African Liberation Movement and to recognize and, you know, to condemn the majority of what was passed as the white peace movement and left, which did not challenge Obama because he was African.
Right.
And now Black is Back has taken that lead. And I think it's important that we note that at the Black is Back Coalition, very successful march on Washington, on the White House on November 13th, just a couple of weeks ago, there was a broad sector of African organizations and individuals who were there, including Black Muslim organizations of all sorts, Mumia organizations, just every kind of political, you know, of course, Black is Back, Harlem Tenants Council, but many others as well, the NAPO, RNA, these kind of organizations that are out there struggling in their areas for the democratic rights of the African community were there under the demands of the Black is Back Coalition and recognizing the complete neocolonial character of Obama. Yet there was not one white organization of any sort except the African People's Solidarity Committee that was there in solidarity with its demands. So that's a whole other struggle, and we will probably have a whole show on that question soon. But to talk about the significance of Diop, a few months after Diop was boldly challenging Obama here in St. Petersburg in August of 2008, I believe it was in early 2009, the city of Philadelphia, vicious city of deep police containment and unspeakable oppression of African people, a city where in many neighborhoods 70-80% of the population lives way below the poverty line, a city where 45% of children are on food stamps, a city that is majority African with conditions of housing that have been described by certain U.S. agencies as equal to, quote, third world housing conditions, a city where just the police are incessant in their a brutal war against the African community through every possible kind of SWAT team and militarized police force, highly armed, assault weapon carrying, ski mask wearing, thugs, helicopters, just a reign of terror. And this has been going on for many, many years. There's a police killing probably on the average of once every 2 weeks or so of a young African man, generally speaking, in that city, a city of brutal, brutal conditions that has, according to statistics, the highest prison population in the world, because it has the highest prison population mm-hmm, coming mm-hmm, out of Philly mm-hmm. in the U.S., and the U.S. is the highest prison population in the world. So
Philly is notorious.
It is brutal, and it goes back to the bombing of MOVE mm-hmm. in 1985, the brutal attack on the MOVE house in 1978, back to assaults on the Black Panther Party. You can go all the way back in the history to assassinations of leaders in the African community in the 1890s. Excuse me. And this is the history of Philadelphia. And as they are entering into a period of Philadelphia's economic crisis, instead of working to build economic development for the African community, the city was prepared, as it's, of course, mayor and city council and all of how many city workers make in the six-digit category of income were solving their problems at the expense of the African community by cutting back necessary services like swimming pools and libraries and a myriad of different kinds of things that they were going to cut back, but at the same time were increasing their budget for police containment mm-hmm. to over $1 billion of new police, new militarized forces, courts, all different kinds of fronts like that. So, you know, this is what the Uhuru movement was taking on. And at a city council meeting, Diop was speaking out against that. He was chanting or speaking out, holding the sign.
On the video, it didn't look like they were even chanting. They're just standing there holding a sign.
He was holding the sign, and actually other people, everybody else in that room practically was holding the sign as well, and some people were chanting. And he was assaulted by undercover cops, so you wouldn't even know who they were. They weren't in uniform. And brutally assaulted, put in a chokehold. And he was charged with assault on a police officer and basically given a felony with 2 years probation, very strict probationary conditions, that if anything happens whatsoever, he will then be sent to prison for I don't know how many years.
And anybody who wants to see that, what happened, you can just go to uhurunews.com or you can go to YouTube and you know, look up Diop Olubala. It's clear that he was the victim of an assault, not the perpetrator.
That's right. And last week, as Diop was on his way to go to Toronto, Canada, for an event in the African community, very brutalized African community in Toronto, by the way, and he was turned away at the border, and I think that they cited, quote, his felony conviction, and certainly are aware of who he is as a bold organizer in the interests of the African community, and was told something like that he's banned from Canada for at least 10 years. So this real assault on his democratic rights and on the right of African people to struggle to fight for the liberation. So I think it's very significant that we're able to play a statement that Pam Africa, the leader of the International Friends and Family of Mumia Abu-Jamal, who's worked for many years for the freedom of Mumia, who faces death row, in the so-called killing of a cop, which he is completely innocent of, and that she's raising that Diop is the political prisoner of this period. And I think that is extremely important. Even as we work to support and free all of the political prisoners who are still locked up from the previous period of struggle in the 60s and 70s, they must be free. But this is the new period of struggle. This is taking on the question of neocolonialism and the right of African people to liberate themselves inside this country as part of the worldwide struggle for African liberation. So let's listen to this clip from Pam Africa.
No, I want to talk about Diop because the people won't be here. People better understand that Diop, this government, want to take this young brother out.
That's right. Yeah.
I went to a meeting and the Don't Spy on Us, and they had a list of people who most recently FBI, no, that's not the title. Homeland Security, the governor of Pennsylvania hired some Israelis and two Israeli hitmen, that's all they are, and let's make it plain, to compile a list of people and organizations that are terrorists. We knew we would be there, the MOVE organization. We knew MUMI would be there, although we're not terrorists. Diop's organization is there, but they also go by name. Yeah. He is the only one out of this entire list that they use his name, his entire name, and his slave name. Yeah. I'm saying, when you see this young brother on the screen here, this young brother is fighting. He is fighting for his life. He is fighting for the life of African people and people, period, all the way across the board. But African people first. There is no way in the world that we, as freedom-fighting people, should not have his name raised up there the way we raised the name of Huey, the way we raised the name of Bobby Seale, the way we raised the name of Mumia, the way we raised the name of the Mumia. We must defend Diop. Diop is on the front line for us. And when you look at it, they're putting Diop's name out there to throw fear into other people who be around. Yeah. Because it's no mistake that they're doing it that way. So I'm saying, yes, indeed, we need white support. We need all the support that we can gather. The people united will never be defeated. The people united will never be defeated. The people united will never be defeated. Down with this rotten ass
Uhuru, and that was Pam Africa speaking on November 6, 2010 at Day in Solidarity with African People in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And she reveals the existence of a new COINTELPRO list, which Diop Olugbala is the only person specifically named in that list. And that is just very significant. And there's an article on that. If you go to uhurunews.com, there's an article dated November 10th called The New COINTELPRO Revealed in Documents Attacking the Uhuru Movement, and really encourage people to look that up and read that. So we want to just, before we go into the second presentation that we're going to play from the Day in Solidarity with African People from November 6th in Philadelphia, want to just give you some information on some very important upcoming events and ways that you can get involved in that you can participate. One thing that you should save the date for is the annual convention, the International Convention of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement, which will take place in Philadelphia from February 19th to the 21st. So be in Philadelphia for that. We also want to let you know about the annual plenary of the African People's Solidarity Committee. If you want to begin to organize in the white community, if you are of the white community and want to take up our stance and our responsibility to build support for the Black liberation struggle and for the Uhuru movement, you should come to St. Petersburg in January from the 9th to the 11th. It's an open conference, the annual conference of the African People's Solidarity Committee, and it is titled this year, Beyond the Crisis of Imperialism, International Conference on White Solidarity with Black Power. Definitely come to St. Petersburg for that conference, and you can get more information at uhurusolidarity.org. Also, a fundraiser for the Uhuru movement that you still have a chance to participate in is an online auction with fantastic gifts that were contributed from artists and acupuncturists and massage therapists and just every kind of thing you can imagine. You can go and bid on and go to apedf.org for that, or you can also find a link to that from uhurusolidarity.org, uhurus solidarity, solidarty.org. And also want to let you know, if you did not know already, that there is a new book been published by Burning Spear Publications called One People, One Party, One Destiny. It is an incredible document from the recent Congress of the African People's Socialist Party, and it's just basically a guide to African revolution in this new century. So you should go to burningspearmarketplace.com if you want to purchase that book. And finally, it's just a couple more weeks now until the Marcus Garvey cruise will take off from Key West from December 12th through the 18th, and you can participate in the Marcus Garvey cruise that is a fundraiser for the African Socialist International. And it's not too late to book your tickets for that cruise. There's going to be speakers and presentations, and it's going to be visits to Grand Cayman, to Jamaica, the home of Marcus Garvey, and Ron Bob Semple, who does a fantastic performance reliving or reenacting some of the life of Marcus Garvey, is going to be doing a performance as a part of that cruise. Also, Omali Shetela, chairman of the African People's Socialist Party, the African Socialist International, will be giving, I'm sure, multiple presentations on the history and the unity of African people in the Caribbean and throughout the world. So it's going to be a dynamic program, an educational cruise, as well as a recreational cruise. And you can book your ticket by calling Tanya Travel at 352-232-2131. That's 352-232-2131. That's a U.S. phone number. So we want to now play the presentation that was given by African People's Solidarity Committee and Chairwoman Penny Hass at the Day in Solidarity with African People that took place November 6, 2010 in Philadelphia. And it was just a really dynamic presentation from the heart. You could really feel the excitement that was happening in that event, and so we're happy to share with you this presentation by Penny Hess.
Uhuru! I really want to welcome everybody here today. I want to thank Kristen again for that incredible film that she put together that really, really tells the story of what we're about. I want to be part of welcoming everybody, and I definitely want to salute Chairman Omali Shetela, under whose leadership I've had the honor of working for about 34 years now, I think, that has changed my life. And you know, I'm just so proud to be a member of the African People's Solidarity Committee. And I want to welcome Nellie Bailey, Glenn Ford, other members. Kia Bolabala. I want to welcome Rich from the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party in this region as well, and just all of you for coming today. And I do want to, you know, make it clear that we're an organization of white people organized by the African People's Socialist Party, which leads the movement for the liberation of African people everywhere. Our job is to go back out into the white community to organize other white people just like ourselves, to wake ourselves up, to look at the truth, to look at the reality and take responsibility, to say it stops here, that we take responsibility to be part of turning this world right side up, and to do what we have to do to rectify the wrongs of the past and to be able to be part of building a new future, a new world in which all human beings can live, no one at the expense of anybody else. And we're doing this in this city of Philadelphia, which we talked about a little bit, where 375,000 people live in deep poverty, while some of the greatest number of millionaires live here. We live in a city, this is in a city where 43% of all children, and that's mostly African children, live on food stamps, face hunger every day, do not have enough food to eat. We're talking about a city. I know that the Uhuru movement has been coming here, building here for the last 25 years since the bombing of the Moot House on Osage Avenue in 1985. This is the city that dropped a bomb. It was televised. People watched it. The whole city watched it as 11 women, men, and children died in that bombing right here on Osage Avenue, destroying a whole neighborhood. Just 5 years or something after they had already attacked MOVE and beat people, killed people, people are in prison today because of what the police did to African people just struggling to exist, to be free, to struggle for justice in this city. That's what this city is. And this is the city where week after week, month after month, another African is killed, is shot by the police, an armed force, no different than what the U.S. is sending into Afghanistan or other places around the world right now, a military force occupying the African community, shooting down young African men, one after another, except that there's nobody with a video there. There's nobody with a camera taking pictures of it. But it's happening week after week, year after year. And the Uhuru movement has been the one out there demonstrating, taking up the case, struggling for the rights, the democratic rights of African people. And this is the city that has Mumia Abu-Jamal in prison. And in just a few days that they're talking about, maybe they're going to sign his death warrant because he stood up in defense of African people in this city. And this is the city where Diop Olubala, as the president of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement, had the courage to stand up in city council and protest this city's $1 billion war budget trained for military forces in occupation of the African community. And he's supposed to be the criminal, but we turn that around. This city has to be on trial. This city and this system, you can ask about the city of brotherly love and all the African people buried who were enslaved by George Washington, buried under the ground where the Liberty Bell is, that this city, just like this country, is built on the enslavement of African people. It's built on genocide. It is not something that got worse or deteriorated in the process. It was formed that way. It was built on plunder, on terror, on genocide, on enslavement of an entire continent of people, and the colonization of the majority of the world's peoples. And this is what has given us, as the white population, the ability to go to college, to live on a peaceful tree-lined street, or go on a vacation somewhere, or expect to have a pension, or all of these things that we take for granted. A car, two cars, three cars in the garage. This is what it all is, as peaceful as it may seem to us on our streets. Just scratch the surface of that. And millions of people are suffering and have been suffering for the last 500 years. And this is the truth that we want to open up today. And when we're talking about African people, we want to make it clear that the African People's Socialist Party defines African people as one people all around the world. That Africans here, putting a hyphen, American, at the end of their name does not make them an American citizen. There are two situations in this country. It's very, very clear. There is one for us, and there is a reality experienced by African, indigenous, and other oppressed and colonized peoples right here. So African people are one people. And historically, the struggle of African people has been to liberate Africa. Africa belongs to Africans, and African people have a right to return, just as the Palestinian people have a right to return to their land anytime, any place they may be. And there is no Shell Oil or De Beers Diamonds or Dell Computers that's backing these wars to kill the people in the Congo for coltan, the mineral, that has any right to set a foot on the continent of Africa. And we recognize that we live today in the crisis of imperialism, as the chairman has said. Imperialism is in crisis. And we see that with all the wars and all the ways that the U.S. is forced to defend its little place at the top of this imperialist pinnacle, that it has to send out and build more and more fronts of the military all around the world, even as it is being defeated, even as it can't win in Iraq, it can't win in Afghanistan, it can't win in Palestine, in occupied Palestine. And we see that the U.S. is in an economic crisis, probably. I don't think that there's ever been an economic crisis like this. And we don't know, you know, we don't know what is going to happen in the future, obviously. But we could say that, as the chairman says, the genie is out of the bottle, and the genie's not going to go back in. I think, do they call that entropy? Maybe, I don't know. It's when the energy is out, it can't, it will never be stuck back in. It's over. It's over. Imperialism's days are numbered, and imperialism is dying, and it is dying, as the chairman says, because of the resistance of the peoples on the planet Earth. Because all around the world, the people are saying, you're not coming in and taking our oil anymore, and if you do, you're going to pay a price, and we will send you back in a body bag. And I don't care if that's somewhere in Afghanistan or somewhere in Oakland, California. That struggle is happening, and people are resisting. And the people have a right to resist this vicious system. This vicious system, there's never been anything like it ever on the history of the planet Earth. It is resistance, and people have a right to be free. And if that challenge is us, then we have to examine the reality and the truth and be able to jump and separate ourselves from this identity with U.S. imperialism and jump off this pedestal and stand in solidarity with the peoples on the planet Earth. Because this, you know, imperialism it's stupid in its arrogance. It is a wounded beast, as the chairman says, and it has the ability to cause great havoc, but it is stupid in its arrogance. You know what I mean? Like, it says, well, we got rid of bed bugs. We sprayed it with DDT, and they should be gone. But the bed bugs are like, we're back, and we're in your bed, and we're here stronger than ever. And imperialism says, well, we got rid of bacteria because we had antibiotics. And the bacteria are saying, we're back, and we're bigger than ever, and we will eat your flesh. Yes. The bacteria are back. And imperialism says, well, we got rid of the indigenous people. Remember the smallpox-infested blankets and the Trail of Tears and Wounded Knee? And the indigenous people are like, we are back, and now we're coming over your southern border, and we're coming to take back what is ours. And imperialism says, well, we defeated the African Liberation Movement. We assassinated Malcolm X, and we assassinated Martin Luther King, and we put Huey P. Newton in prison, and then we assassinated him. But the African Liberation Movement is saying, we're back. We're the Uhuru Movement. It's the African People Socialist Party, the African Socialist International, and African people are back 1 billion strong to take back Africa. And they say, well, we got rid of white people who have a consciousness, because we just let them smoke their pot and they can have their sexual freedom and they can do whatever they want to do, but just stay plugged into their mortgage, the mall, the job, and supporting what this government does to oppress people inside this country and around the world. But the African People Solidarity Committee is saying, we're back, and maybe we're here for the first time ever, but we are here. We are white people who can take this stand, and we ask you to join us to take this stand. And one of the things that we want to talk about today, that's sort of a theme in this whole event, is the question of racism, because in this crisis of imperialism that we're facing, what stand do we take? Where is our place? And how do we take that stand? And the understanding that we have from Chairman O'Malley Shetela and the African People Socialist Party is that the main question is not racism. The main question is the political and economic conditions that African people face, and their right to liberate Africa and have political control over their lives. So the question of me spending $600 to spend on a weekend to unlearn my racism doesn't really affect that in any way. It's something that might make me feel better, but the reality is that it keeps me in the center. The whole question of racism doesn't call on you or I to do anything. It doesn't call on us to take a stand in relationship to this government, in relationship to imperialism or colonialism that African people are facing. It says, I can feel better, and I can change some words that I might say, but it's really saying, you know, we look at the whole history of what white people have done to African people. To unlearn racism is like, my bad, sorry, can't we all be, will you like me now? I'm going to change. I mean, you know, even, what do they call it? Even alcoholics have a 12-step program. We have to go through a process. And if you look at the program, you know, of AA, it's about a lot of rectification. It's about a lot of repairing the damage done, and that's what has to happen. We can't just say, okay, well, it's over now because I want it to be over. Because we still have the power. We still have the stolen resources. We still have everything. To say that we're just taking on the question of racism is to invite African people to come into white society that's been cleansed a little bit. That's not what this is about. This is about bringing down imperialism that is built on the backs of African, indigenous, and oppressed people around the world. It's about their leadership and that we work under it and that we go back into the white community as, you know, inside the belly of the beast to do the work, to win other white people just like you and me, to begin to separate ourselves from what this country and government and system, parasitic system, expects us to do, and to say we stand on the side of African people, we stand on the side of oppressed peoples around the world, and we recognize that that is the only thing that is going to get out of this crisis that we're in. Because this system has to go. It has to go. There has never been anything like it on the face of planet Earth. And I also wanted to say that when I was a child, which was many, many, many years ago, and back in the 50s, I remember something. I remember watching TV, and probably we just got the TV, and I remember seeing a show then on TV where, you know, this was, what, 10, 15 years after this, what the chairman calls the Second Imperialist War, when Germany, you know, killed other white people, killed Jews in Germany, just the way, as the chairman says, that all white Europeans united around that same genocide against African people and indigenous people for hundreds of years, but never took a stand about it. And I remember watching this show, and it was happening in Germany, and somebody was interviewing people who lived in the neighborhood of the concentration camps. And they were asking people, well, you lived right next door to the concentration camp. I mean, couldn't you smell it? Didn't you see the smoke? Didn't you hear the cries? And everybody was like, well, I didn't know. And I just remember making this kind of pledge to myself that I would never not know. I would never want it to not know. And what I didn't know, and what the chairman made me understand, was probably the reason that I could even feel that way, was because at that very same period, African people in this country were struggling against the same conditions, were struggling for freedom and liberation, and that struggle is right here, and that this is where we start. This is where we start. And that when we live on the pedestal of the oppression of African people, everything that we have came from the mouths of other people's children, then knowing or not knowing is a choice. It is a choice. It is a stand. And I believe that most of you here who came out to this event want to make that choice. Right. And I believe that we have to make that choice. That we don't live in a time when we can sit in a cafe and think this is an interesting idea. That we have to be part of rectifying this planet, of taking this stand, of standing up to imperialism and white power, and doing what is our responsibility to do. Go back inside of the heart of the monster and liberate all of the stolen resources and return them to the people on the planet Earth. This is what we have to do. And it is what we are doing. This is the challenge. So I really want to, you know, just say that I'm excited about this event and that we can take this stand. It is an incredibly liberating experience for us as white people to be able to honestly look at what our ancestors and ourselves have done and what we're responsible for, to look at the history of terror. Talk about homegrown terror. That was us. The lynchings, the absolute mutilation, the slow murders of African people for sport here inside this country, in Africa and other places, the how lynchings were a party where 10,000 white people would come and dance. They'd dance playing. They had food sales. It was the beginning of the county fair. It's what we did. And it wasn't just in the South. Read your history of Philadelphia. Read your history of Philadelphia. There were Irish and Italian and other European gangs who just roamed the streets of South Street back in the day, which was the African community, or one of the African communities, terrorizing, murdering, killing, burning down, raping Africans day after day, saying, "We're white, we are white. You do not take a job from us. You do not try to be part of the U.S. system because you are not." This is what we have to take responsibility. We have to take responsibility for active genocide against the indigenous people. They call them the pioneers. What were the pioneers? They were a civilian army armed with rifles and guns to kill the indigenous people and steal their land. Read your history. We have to take responsibility about this. And, you know, people talk about, well, you're just trying to make me feel guilty. And I think that it's interesting because, I mean, first of all, look what the U.S. did to Iraq, saying it was guilty. Look what it did to Afghanistan, saying it was guilty. And I think that it's so easy for us to shell out, you know, other people's responsibility for guilt. Well, there's nothing wrong with guilt. It is a valid human emotion that tells you when you did something wrong and lets you change it. And we have to acknowledge it. We have to take responsibility. I think that we can. I have faith in us. I have faith in us. The chairman has taught me that, because when you first understand white people, you know, what we did, you like, I don't want to organize in the white community. I mean, can I go anywhere else? I mean, can I get another assignment? No, I just don't want to do that, you know? But the chairman was like, well, you can win other people just like yourself. And we do. We have an organization. And I do think that there are people that want to take this stand, that want to be part of the future, that want to be part of making history in a positive way, and bringing down the system and building up something that's positive in which no one lives at the expense of anybody else on this planet. So, I know I didn't get to show my PowerPoint, but I don't know if I do it still have time.
You can.
Well, I don't want to take up too much time.
How long?
Where am I?
You
10 minutes? Anyway.
Yeah, 10 minutes.
10 minutes, okay. Well, I think I'm not going to, but you can watch it. You can watch this, I think it's up on the website, apscuhuru.org. And we have several PowerPoints up there. And also, I think there's one of me giving it in Oakland. But I just want to say a couple more things, and that is that we have to have organization. Organization is key. Everything about imperialism is geared towards making us an individual. An individual first. We're out there. We're the rugged individual. In fact, if we're white and we're going out west to kill the indigenous people, then we're rugged. And we have to recognize that no successful movement ever reached its goals of liberating the people without organization, without an organization. Imperialism has guns, it has armies, it has tanks, it has media, it has control of everything, it has all the stolen wealth. We do not have that. The people have one thing only, and that is a united organization. And the organization can win, it can defeat imperialism. Look at the Vietnamese. Look at the Vietnamese, they had nothing when the U.S. invaded Vietnam. And the Vietnamese had just fought off the French,
right.
And before that, the Japanese. And they had a huge, they had no food. They lived on maybe a little handful of rice a day. And the U.S. thought, well, all we have to do is go in there with our, you know, our assault weapons and our tanks, and all we have to do is put berets on the Marines, and everybody will think that it's Che Guevara coming, or, you know, some ridiculous thing that absolutely had no effect.
Uhuru, and then you've been listening to African People's Solidarity Committee Chairwoman Penny Hess here on uhururadio.com, Reparations in Action radio program. Tune in again next week and stay tuned for Diasporic Music with Norman Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali. Uhuru.